1937. Talk number 420. A certain lawyer from Kudalor quoted as follows. Neither the sun shines there, nor the moon, nor the stars, nor lightning. How can fire shine there? All these luminaries shine in his light only. With his light, all these shine forth, unquote. He asked, what does with his light? Mean here? Does all these shine on account of him or in his light? Maharshi, there is only he. He and his light are the same. There's no individual to perceive other things, because the perceiver and the perceived are only one, or he. The sun, the moon, etc. shine forth. How? Do they come and tell you that they shine forth, or does another apart from them say that they shine forth? Devotee, of course, I say that they shine forth. Mercy, therefore they shine on account of you. Again, consciousness is necessary to know that they shine forth. That consciousness is yourself, or you. So then you or your consciousness is the same as he and his light, by which all else shine forth. Devotee, is that light like sunlight? Maharshi, no. The sunlight is jada and sentient. You are aware of it. It makes objects perceptible and chases away darkness. Whereas consciousness is that light which makes not only light, but also darkness perceptible. Darkness cannot exist before sunlight, but it can remain in the light of consciousness. Similarly, this consciousness is pure knowledge, in which both knowledge and ignorance shine. Devotee, if God is all, why does the individual suffer for his actions? Are not the actions prompted by him, for which the individual is made to suffer? Mercy, he who thinks he is the doer is also the sufferer. Devotee, but the actions are prompted by God, and the individual is only his tool. Mercy, this logic is applied only when one suffers, but not when one rejoices. If the conviction prevails always, there will be no suffering either. Devotee, when will the suffering cease? Maharshi, not until individuality is lost. If both the good and bad actions are his, why should you think that the enjoyment and suffering are alone yours? He who does good or bad also enjoys pleasure or suffers pain. Leave it there, and do not superimpose suffering on you. Talk number 421. A resident devotee, Gunjaswami, related an observation of Sri Maharshi after the robbery of the ashram in 1923. Some disciples were asking why the robbers should be allowed to molest even sadhus, and why the sadhus should not protect themselves and their dependents from the robbers. Sri Bhagavan observed, there were rishis like Vishwamitra who could duplicate the universe if they wished. They lived during the lifetime of Ravana, who caused agony even to Sita and Rama, among others. Could not Vishwamitra have destroyed Ravana by his occult powers? Though capable, he kept still. Why? The occurrences are known to the sages, but pass away without leaving an impression on their minds. Even a deluge will appear a trifle to them. They do not care for anything. June 7, 1937, talk 422. Dr. Venkata Rao, a visitor from Guntur, where is Guntur?
Andhra.
Andhra. There is a, from Hyderabad, where is it?
I don't know exactly.
No. The guru asks the disciple to do things contrary to ethical principles. But the disciple, having accepted the person as the master, desires to please the master, but his moral sense obstructs him. What should he do under the circumstances? Maharshi, no reply. Devotee, I shall make myself clear. The guru asked his disciples to commit a theft, and the disciple did not do it. The master then said, I wanted to test to see if you had completely surrendered yourself or retained your individuality. It is now clear what it is. Is the guru right in ordering the disciple that way? Maharshi, still no reply. Another person observed, there are persons on whom I refuse to sit in judgment. Still, I cannot help feeling if they deserve the appellation of gurus. They appear bogus men. If they be really worthy, they would not order the disciple in that way. Maharshi, but the person said it is for a test. The questioner continued, should it be carried out? Maharshi, your original statement contains the answer to your question. Both the questioners jointly asked, the action is disagreeable. Can it be done? Maharshi, the question might be referred to the person himself, that is the guru. He is responsible for the situation. A young man asks, I try to cultivate willpower, but do not succeed. How should I do it? No answer. Young man, I came here 3 years ago, and Sri Bhagavan said that willpower is necessary for strength of mind. Since then, I have been desiring to cultivate it, but without success. Maharshi, no answer. Young man, during these years, I have had 4 or 5 reverses. They upset me considerably. There is always the fear of failure haunting my attempts. This results in what want of faith in myself, which certainly foredooms my effort to failure. Nothing, in fact, succeeds like success, and also nothing foils one's attempts like failure, hence my question. Maharshi, no answer. Young man, is not willpower necessary for success? It should ensure success and also rule out failure. Maharshi, no answer. Young man, I try to gain willpower. After these years, I find myself only where I began. There's no progress. Maharshi, no answer. Young man, what are the means for gaining willpower? Maharshi, your idea of willpower is success ensured. Willpower should be understood to be the strength of mind which makes it capable for meeting success or failure with equanimity. It is not synonymous with certain success. Why should one's attempts be always attended with success? Success develops arrogance, and the man's spiritual progress is thus arrested. Failure, on the other hand, is beneficial, inasmuch as it opens the eyes of the man to his limitations and prepares him to surrender himself. Self-surrender is synonymous with eternal happiness. Therefore, one should try to gain the equal poise of mind under all circumstances. That is willpower. Again, success and failure are the result of prarabdha and not of willpower. A man may be doing only good and noble actions and yet prove a failure. Another may do otherwise and yet be uniformly successful. This does not mean that the willpower is present in the one and not in the other. Devotee, it is said in the book Uladunarpadu, Truth Revealed, that the world is a product of the mind. Maharshi, yes. Devotee, does it not follow that the mind grown strong brings the world under control? Maharshi, the mind in its external activities gives rise to the world. Such activities fritter away the strength of the mind. Its strength lies in being confined to itself, with the external activities arrested. Devotee, there is an idiot who cannot count up to 10. His mind does not certainly wander as does that of a thinker. Is the former a better man than the latter? Maharshi, who says that he is an idiot? Your mind in its wandering says so. Devotee, is willpower gained by divesting oneself of thoughts? Maharshi, rather by controlling oneself to a single thought. Ultimately, this will disappear also, leaving pure consciousness behind. Concentration helps one to it. Devotee, so then, it is gained by directing the mind and concentrating it. The personality has nothing to do with it. Maharshi, personality is the root cause of external activities. It must think for gaining the highest good. Talk 424. In the course of conversation with a learned man who asked about Purusha and Prakriti, Sri Bhagavan said, Purusha and Prakriti are only the bifurcation of the One Supreme. They are surmised because the student has the sense of duality deep-rooted. And the same Bhagavad Gita also says that Purusha, Purushottama, lies beyond Purusha and Prakriti. What are Paranadi, Sushumna Nadi, and the heart? Maharshi, but Sushumna resolves into the Para. Sushumna to Paralina. Heart is usually understood to be muscular organ lying on the left of the chest. The modern psychological review speaks of the physical organ on the left and the heart center on the right. The Bible says that the fool's heart is on the left and a wise man's on the right. Yoga Vashishta says that there are two hearts. The one is Samvit and the other the blood vessel. Devotee, what is Anahata? Maharshi, Anahata is the chakra lying behind the heart. It is not Samvit. Lalita Sasanam has it. Anahata Chakrastayai Namo Namaha. Salutations to the core situated in Anahata. And the next mantra, Hrit, in the heart. Thus it is clear that Anahata is not the same as Hrit, heart. Talk number 425. Willpower or any other is gained by practice, abhyasa. Devotee, is success not dependent on Guru's grace? Maharshi, yes, it is. Is not your practice itself due to such grace? The fruits are the results of the practice and follow it automatically. There is a stanza in Kaivalya which says, O Guru, you have been always with me, watching me through several incarnations and ordaining my course until I was liberated. Unquote. The self manifests externally as Guru when occasion arises. Otherwise, he is always within, doing the needful. June 12, 1937. Talk number 426. Mr. Das of Allahabad University asked, has the food which one usually takes anything to do with increase or decrease of one's spirituality? That is, does it influence spirituality for good or bad? Marcy, yes. Sattvic food in moderate quantity is helpful to spiritual development. Mr. Das. For a grihi, that is a man of the world, what conduct in life will help him most spiritually? Maharshi, dhyana or bhakti, which mean the same thing. Mr. Das. What is meant by taking the name of God? How to reconcile the following two ideas? The Bible says, do not take the name of God in vain. The Hindu sastras enjoin taking the name of God all the time. One should not use the name of God artificially and superficially without feeling. To use the name of God, one must call upon Him and surrender to Him unreservedly. After such surrender, the name of God is constantly with the man. Mr. Das. What are the fundamental tests for discovering men of great spirituality? Since some are reported to behave like insane people. Maharshi, the jnani's mind is known only to the jnani. One must be a jnani oneself in order to understand another jnani. However, the peace of mind which permeates the saint's atmosphere is the only means by which the seeker understands the greatness of the saint. His words or actions or appearance are no indication of his greatness, for they are ordinary beyond the comprehension of common people. Devotee. Has man any free will, or is everything in his life predestined and preordained? Any difference between the two? Predestined and preordained.
They're the same thing.
Maharshi, free will holds the field in association with individuality. As long as individuality lasts, so long there is free will. All the sastras are based on this fact, and they advise directing the free will in the right channel. Find out to whom free will or destiny matters. Abide in it. Then these two are transcended. That is the only purpose of discussing these questions. To whom do these questions arise? Find out and be at peace. Devotee, our intellect and emotion, like the physical body, growths which come with the birth of man, and do they dissolve or survive after death? Maharshi, before considering what happens after death, just consider what happens in your sleep. Sleep is only the interval between two waking states. Do they survive that interval? Devotee, yes, they do. mercy. The same hold for death also. They represent body consciousness and nothing more. If you are the body, they always hold on to you. If you are not the body, they do not affect you. The one who was in sleep is now in waking state, just speaking. You are not the body in sleep. Are you the body now? Find it out. Then the whole problem is solved. Similarly, that which is born must die. Whose is the birth? Were you born? If you say you were, of whose birth are you speaking? It is the body which was born, and it is that which will die. How do birth and death affect the eternal self? Think and say to whom the questions arise. Then you will know. Talk 427. Devotee. It is said that the universe consists of light and sound. Are there two constituents, like the light and sound, in the physical world? Can they be seen and heard with the physical organs, the eye and the ear? Or are they to be experienced only subjectively? Maharshi, light and sound correspond to Bindu and Nada in tantric terminology. And to the mind and life current in the Vedantic. They are gross, subtle, and transcendental. The organ can perceive the gross aspect. The other aspects are not so perceptible. The subtle can be inferred, and the transcendental is only transcendental. Devotee, Hinduism laid down reincarnation of the jiva. What happened to the jiva during the interval between the death of one body and the birth of the next one? Maharshi solved this question by referring to the state of sleep. What happens to you in sleep? Devotee, I do not know. Maharshi, yet you exist. Therefore, existence beyond knowledge and ignorance is indicated. Although ignorance was prevailing, according to your present idea, yet you did not say so in sleep. You continue to exist all the same. Mere ignorance does not rule out the fact of your existence. Devotee, in the practice of meditation, are there any signs of the nature of subjective experience or otherwise, which will indicate the aspirant's progress towards self-realization? Maharshi, the degree of freedom from unwanted thoughts and the degree of concentration on a single thought are the measure to gauge the progress. Devotee, is it necessary to take to sannyas for realization? Maharshi, sannyasa is to renounce one's individuality. This is not the same as tonsure and ochre robes. A man may be a griha, a grihi, yet if he does not think he is a grihi, he is a sannyasi. On the contrary, a man may wear ochre robes and wander about, yet if he thinks he is a sannyasi, he is not that. To think of sannyasa defeats its own purpose. Sri Bhagavan remarked, people see the world. The perception implies the existence of a seer and a seen. The objects are alien to the seer. The seer is intimate, being the self. They do not, however, turn their attention to finding out the obvious seer, but run about analyzing the seen. The more the mind expands, the farther it goes and renders self-realization more difficult and complicated. The man must directly see the seer and realize the self. Devotee, so then it amounts to synthesizing phenomena and finding the one reality behind. Maharshi, why do you still consider the phenomena? And finding, see who the seer is. Synthesis means engaging the mind in other pursuits. That is not the way to realization. Devotee, I want to eliminate the non-self so that the self may be realized. How shall I do it? What are the characteristics of the non-self? Maharshi, there is one who says that the non-self must be eliminated. Who is he? Devotee, I mean this man. When I travel from Calcutta to Madras, I must know Madras so that I may not alight at an intermediate station out of ignorance. There are the signboard and the timetable to guide me in my travel. But what is the guide in my search for the self? No, it's a cell phone, right? Everyone got the cell phone. Maharshi, it is all right for the journey. You know how far away you are from Madras. Can you tell me how far you are from the self in order that you should seek it? Devotee, I do not know. Maharshi, are you ever divorced from the self? Is it possible to be divorced? Are not all these alien to you? And the self the most intimate? Where should you go to gain the self? Devotee, I'm now away from the self. I must retrace my steps in order to regain it. Maharshi, how far away? Who says that he is apart? Can there be two selves? Devotee, it is said that individuals are modifications of the self, just as ornaments are of gold. Maharshi, when a man speaks in terms of ornaments, ignoring their substance gold, he is told that they are gold. But here the man is consciousness and speaks of himself as its modification. Do you remain apart from self that you speak of yourself as its modification? Devotee, cannot gold be imagined to say that it has become an ornament? Maharshi, being insentient, it does not say so. But the individual is sentient and cannot function apart from consciousness. The self is pure consciousness. Yet the man identifies himself with the body, which is itself insentient, and does not say, I am the body, of its own accord. Someone else says so. The unlimited self does not. Who else is he that says so? A spurious I arises between the pure consciousness and the insentient body, and imagines itself limited to the body. Think this, and it will vanish as a phantom. That phantom is the ego, or the mind, or the individuality. All the sastras are based on the rise of this phantom, whose elimination is their purpose. The present state is mere illusion. This illusionment is the goal and nothing more. Devotee, the mind is said to be a bundle of thoughts. Maharshi, because it functions on account of the single root, the I thought. Manasanto kim margane krite naiva manasam marga arjavat. It has no real existence as a separate entity. Devotee, are not thoughts projections from the mind? Marcy, in that case, the mind is taken to be synonymous with the I thought or the ego. 15th December 1937. Talk number 428. Sri Bhagavan has selected 10 stanzas from the famous work of Sri Shankara Sivananda Lahari describing devotion, bhakti. 1. What is bhakti? Just as the ankola fruit falling from the tree rejoins it, or a piece of iron is drawn to a magnet, so also thoughts, after rising up, lose themselves and their original source. This is bhakti. The original source of thoughts is the feet of the Lord, Ishwara. Love of his feet forms bhakti. So you have seen ankola tree, ankola fruit.
What is it?
Well, any ankola fruit.
I don't know what does it in Tamil. If you know in Tamil, I can say.
Well, the ankola must be Tamil, right? I don't know.
No, it is not in Tamil. It's
Sivananda Lahari, so it's a Sanskrit word.
Sanskrit, right? Must be Sanskrit.
Because it's the fruit that goes back to the, rejoins it, or a piece of iron falling from the tree rejoins it. Number 2, fruit of bhakti. The thick cloud of bhakti formed in the transcendental sky of the lotus of the Lord's feet pours down a rain of bliss and fills the lake of mind to overflowing. Only then the jiva, always transmigrating to no useful end, has its real purpose fulfilled. That was number 76. All right, third verse selected. Where to place bhakti? Devotions to gods who have themselves their origin and end can result in fruit similarly with origin and end. In order to be in bliss everlasting, our devotion must be directed to its source, namely the feet of the ever-blissful Lord. 4. Bhakti is a matter only for experience and not for words. How can logic or other polemics be of real use? Can the Gatapattas, favorite examples of logicians, meaning like the pot and the cloth, can the Gatapattas save you in a crisis? Why then waste yourself thinking of them and on discussion? Stop exercising the vocal organs and giving them pain. Think of the feet of the Lord and drink the nectar. Number 5. Immortality is the fruit of devotion. At the sight of him who in his heart has fixed the Lord's feet, death is reminded of his bygone the disastrous encounter with Markandeya and flees away. All other gods worship only Shiva, placing their crowned heads at his feet. Such involuntary worship is only natural to Shiva. Goddess liberation, his consort, always remains part of him. Number 6. If only devotion be there, the conditions of the jiva cannot affect him. However different the bodies, the mind alone is lost in the Lord's feet. Bliss overflows. 7. Devotion always accompanied, always unimpaired. Wherever or however it be, only let the mind lose itself in the Supreme. It is yoga, it is bliss, or the yogi, or the bliss incarnate. 8. Karma Yoga also is bhakti. To worship God with flowers and other external objects is troublesome. Only lay the single flower, the heart, at the feet of Shiva and remain at peace. Not to know this simple thing and to wander about, how foolish, what misery. number nine, this karma puts an end to one samsara. Whatever the order of life, ashrama, of the devotee, only once thought of, Shiva relieves the devotee of his load of samsara and takes it on himself. And 10, devotion is jnana. The mind losing itself in Shiva's feet is devotion. Ignorance lost, knowledge, liberation. 16th December 1937. A few ladies had come from Bangalore. One among them asked, "The world is composed of differences. From our point of view, how shall we be able to get over these differences and comprehend the one essence of all things?" Marshi, the differences are the result of the sense of doership, karatutva. The fruits will be destroyed if the root is destroyed, so relinquish the sense of doership. The differences will vanish, and the essential reality will reveal itself. In order to give up the sense of doership, one must seek to find out who the doer is. Inquire within. The sense of doership will vanish. Vichara, inquiry, is the method. 22nd December 1937, Talk 4:30. A Marathi gentleman asked, "I have read much about self-realization. I do japa, puja, etc. Nothing seems to satisfy me. Can Sri Bhagavan kindly guide me?" Maharshi, what is that you seek to gain? Everyone seeks happiness. Happiness is one's lot in everyday sleep. Bring about that state of happiness even in the waking state. That is all. Devotee, I do not follow. How is it to be done? Maharshi, Atma Vichara is the way. Devotee, it seems too difficult to adopt, being so intangible. What shall I do if I feel unfit for the method of inquiry? Maharshi, guidance is there. It is for individuals to avail themselves of it. 25th December 1938. A Telugu gentleman stood up and asked, "The mind is said to be pure when all the vasanas are wiped out. It is also the finality. When there is something to be gained, is it not duality?" Maharshi, let the mind be first made pure. If the same question arises thereafter, the answer may then be sought. 26th December 1937. An Andhra visitor asked, "What is sleep?" Maharshi, "Why? You experience it every day." Devotee, "I want to know exactly what it is, so that it may be distinguished from samadhi." Maharshi, "How can you know sleep when you are awake?" The answer is to go to sleep and find out what it is. Devotee, "But I cannot know it in this way." Maharshi, "This question must be raised in sleep." Devotee, "But I cannot raise a question then." Maharshi, "So, that is sleep." Sri Bhagavan went out for a few minutes. On his return, the same man asked, "Self-realized jnanis are seen to take food and to do actions like others. Do they similarly experience the states of dream and of sleep?" Maharshi, "Why do you seek to know the state of others, maybe jnanis? What do you gain by knowing about others? You must seek to know your own real nature. Who do you think you are?" "Evidently, the body." You won't think, "Yes." Maharshi, "Similarly, you take the jnani to be the physical body whereon the actions are superimposed by you. That makes you put these questions. The jnani himself does not ask if he has a dream or a sleep state. He has no doubts himself. The doubts are in you. This must convince you of your wrong premises. The Jnani is not the body. He is the self of all. The sleep, dream, samadhi, etc. are all states of the Ajnanis. The self is free from all these. Here is the answer for the former question also. Devotee, I sought to know the state of stitta pragnata, unshaken knowledge. Maharshi, the sastras are not for the Jnani. He has no doubts to be clear. The riddles are for the Ajnanis only. The sastras are for them alone. Devotee, sleep is a state of nescience, and so it is said of samadhi also. Maharshi, jnana is beyond knowledge and nescience. There can be no question about that state. It is the self.